Hello, this is Joe Peters at In the Know of Joe, and I'm about to interview Michael McDonough, who is the president of RVCC. It's early March of 2024, and Michael and I spoke last back in 2022 when RVCC was at the height of COVID, and now that we're in a post-COVID, more normal atmosphere, I want to find out what's happening new at RVCC and what we can look forward to in the near future. Hi, this is Joe Peters with In the Know of Joe, and today's guest is Michael McDermott, Dr. Michael McDermott. He doesn't like to be called doctor, at Raritan Valley Community College. Michael, you've been there since, well, almost 10 years at this point?
2014 is when I came, yes, June.
Super. Well, give us a little about your background.
Well, sure. I don't think there's much to tell. I grew up in the northwest of England. Went to college in England, came to the States in 1981, went to Oklahoma State, went to Penn State, began a career as a faculty member at Alfred University in Western New York. About 20 years ago, transferred over to administration, to the community college sector, came here in 2014.
Wow. And you did some graduate work at Harvard too?
I did. I did some graduate work at Harvard in higher ed administration.
You could never tell because you don't have the arrogance of the Harvard. Harvard's a great school.
You know, there's always somebody smarter than me in the room, so I don't play that up at all. I was not a great student anyway.
I did a three-day stint at MIT on a business course, and they took us and we toured Harvard, and I'll never forget, they said, what's the difference between MIT and Harvard? If anybody's not been there, only a few miles apart. In the same
right.
Stage. And they said, in MIT, you're going to go to your course at Building 15, Section 5, Level 2. At Harvard, you're going to go to Fitzgerald Hall. They said, that's the difference between MIT and Harvard. And I've never quite forgotten it. It was really, really great. So we talked last about 3 years ago. I'm going to bring up a few things that we mentioned then and sure. Bring it forward. But first of all, you gave a talk at the Somerset County Business Breakfast 3 weeks ago or so where we last met. And I thought maybe just recapping the highlights.
Sure.
Things that you mentioned that were people might not know about Raritan Valley Community College or RVCC for sure.
Sure.
What you're doing
sure.
New.
Yeah, that's a great intro, Joe. I mean, RV is a comprehensive community college. We serve well over 7,000 students. There's a lot going on. So some very brief highlights, some fast facts that people may not recognize about the institution. For example, Raritan Valley Community College is the sole provider in the state of New Jersey for the associate degree in the state prisons. We have over 500 incarcerated students who are pursuing an associate's degree in liberal arts, and Raritan Valley administers that entire program across 6 or 7 state prisons.
So how is that done? They don't come to RVCC?
No, they don't. Our instructors go out to the prisons.
Okay.
And all of the instruction takes place inside the facility.
Wonderful.
So it's a major operation. Raritan Valley was one of the original colleges in the nation that was called a second chance Pell site,
right.
Which means that the inmates are eligible for federal funding. So they can access Pell grants to pay for the tuition. That program has become so large, Joe, that we now have a staff of 5 full-time people running that program.
And how many people have received their associate's degree so far?
We've lost count. It is a significant number. I went to the very first graduation at Edna Mann. That was back, Joe, in 2015.
Okay.
So it is in the hundreds now that have graduated.
Wonderful,
Yeah,
wonderful. Very
it's a great
commendable.
program.
So they're not just pumping iron in the prisons anymore.
They are not, no. Second fact about Raritan Valley that perhaps people might not know, we are a federally recognized Hispanic serving institution. To be a federally recognized Hispanic serving institution, you have to have 25% of your total student population be Hispanic. We
Okay.
are now over 28% of our population is Hispanic. That's been a dramatic increase over the course of the 10 years. As you and I noted, Joe, it really reflects the changing demographic, not only of Somerset County, but I might add of Hunterdon County
Right.
as well. There is a significant Latinx population in Flemington that we are now witnessing in Hunterdon Central, and those students are migrating to Raritan Valley as well. So it's not just a reflection of Somerset County's diversity, but that significant population
But the
in Hunterdon.
diversity in New Jersey moves from east to west. So probably at the 2010 census had Somerset County at under 10% diverse, and in 2020 it was 20%. Eventually it'll catch up, but Somerset County is better than 50% or close to 50%
Sure.
diverse just by population today.
Sure.
So
Sure.
does that work by holding classes in Spanish?
No. What it does mean, though, Joe, is that we have a very comprehensive ESL program. So we have to find ways, both in the Workforce Training Center and in our academic programs, of honing those students' English language skills,
Okay.
because all of our instruction is in English. And so while many of those students are bilingual, some are not, and especially if they're recently arrived. So we have to find ways of propelling those students
So
through,
that's what you're calling English as a second language.
English as a second language. That's right. And
Wonderful.
once they reach a proficiency level that it would allow them to take English composition, for example,
Right.
and be successful, then they can really begin that college level journey. Unless they're in a workforce program and there are slightly different ESL pathways for that population.
Okay, so I'd like to talk about workforce a little bit separate later in the
Sure.
conversation.
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
I find it amazing that because I'm in business and you're in education, but the cross, we've met at several functions in the past. And I've talked several times in the past 101. We actually served on a diversity board together, if I remember. It was 6 or 7 years ago. But what I'm seeing in business is more and more tuning into. We just had a conversation this morning about mortgages, how the Spanish speaking typically aren't using financial institutions, or at least weren't using them, and they're now being trained to build credit up and banking up so that they are mortgage worthy. And we've got Spanish speaking mortgage officers so that they're comfortable in talking out their situation. So business is tuned in, education is tuned in. I think it's wonderful. It's an idea that's probably well overdue.
So I think there's an interesting sort of universal feature, Joe, about community colleges. So if you will let me digress for 1 minute,
Sure.
one of the great moments in higher ed history, and sometimes it's neglected, was immediately following the Second World War with the passage of the Servicemen's Adjustment Act, what we call the GI Bill.
Right.
That legislation, Joe, really opened up college to a whole generation of Americans that had previously not gone to college. These were people of low income, people of color, and it coincided with the growth of the community college. What's interesting to me, Joe, is that today we are now providing that opportunity for Latinx populations and new immigrant populations that are coming to the United States. The community college, as you've just pointed out, is that vehicle to social mobility,
Right.
to economic success. And it's those core kinds of values, right, of American society, of American culture. And it's interesting to see how different populations access the community college and then move through and begin to climb that kind of ladder of American success. I know it sounds corny, and I know it sounds like a myth, but it isn't. It
No,
really isn't. Colleges are transformational.
it's evolution,
Yeah.
and it's a slow evolution, but it's an evolution nonetheless. What is English being one, Spanish being two? What is your third language at the school as far as attendees?
So it's after it's the African American or Black student population and the Asian population.
Okay.
So both of those groups are, over 10% of the student population, about 11% each.
Amazing.
And the Asian population, of course, reflects, as we've already documented, as we've already said, the kinds of groups that have moved into Somerset and Hunterdon County over a period of time. Certainly, we see large numbers of Indian students now coming to
Right.
Raritan Valley. And so we really are, or we really do, Joe, reflect the populations of these two counties.
Super. And my question to you, it's a little off course, but I think it's probably on people listening mind. What about the immigration issues that we're having? Has that started to affect your school population yet?
No, I don't see that. We certainly have a large immigrant population. We do have undocumented students. We certainly have what are known now as the Dreamers,
Right.
those students that were brought here as children. And again, I think our role is always to try to provide these students with the tools, with the education, with the opportunity to be successful, to succeed, and to contribute to the place where they live, where they go to school, where they will work. But again, the mission of the community college and our mission, we're an open access institution. We try to provide a home for all students. Sometimes we're very successful, sometimes not so.
So now that you've mentioned the word home, the last time I talked to you, you had about 8,100 students, except most of them weren't there anymore because of COVID.
Right.
Seems like your population is about the same, but I think the third point you made in the talk was you're now going to have on-campus housing.
We are trying very, very, very hard to begin a very bold project to be the first community college in New Jersey with student housing.
Right.
We've progressed very well. We're close. And it will be about 350 beds.
Wow.
We think, again, it's always related to our mission. We're a mission-driven institution. So if our mission is to provide access to affordable and excellent higher education,
Right.
Our students need housing, so we're going to try to provide that.
Wonderful. What kind of a time frame is on that?
I think if we are aggressive, we may see it completed, Joe, in perhaps 2, 2.5 years.
Okay. So that's almost 5% of it. 10% would be 800. So 350 would be roughly 5% of your student body. Now, that 8,000, does that include? Well, let me get one more question and I'm going to come back to my thought here. Are you going to provide round the clock food service like cafeteria for that housing?
We would have to.
You would
That
have
will
to.
be part of the plan, yes.
Okay. So my next question was, does the 8,000 include the workforce development or is that separate?
Yes, it does. It does. We've seen, as you know, we've seen significant increases in workforce. We built a 46,000 square foot facility. We are now adding another 22,000 square feet
Okay.
to that facility. That'll be complete by next summer. We will add new programs. We will enhance current programs, but that footprint, Joe, that focus on workforce has been a really significant achievement for the college, and especially for local business and industry, but most importantly, for the students that have gone through those programs and now have jobs with sustainable wages, and they are staying in New Jersey.
And I went to an event down at the Verve restaurant about a month and a half ago, and it was NJBIA spoke, I think it was. And she said New Jersey is the number one outward migration in college-educated 18 to 34-year-olds. I'm not sure if that's good or not, but I'm sure it's probably in the ballpark. Do you see the same with your students, or do you see more staying?
So it's a great data point. Let me give you another data point, and then let me tell you about why community colleges are great state investments. So 38% of all New Jersey 18-year-olds who graduate from high school leave the state to go to college.
Right.
We lead the nation in the out-migration of 18-year-olds. For many of those students, my own son included, they do not come back. Over 72% of community college graduates stay in the county of the college in which they attended.
Wow.
So that's an important investment that you make in community colleges. It is our students that become the nurses at Hunterdon Healthcare or
Right.
Robert Wood Johnson Somerset. It is our graduates who become police officers at Bridgewater or Clinton. It is our students that work in local advanced manufacturing companies like Triad Tools. So it's our students that sustain the places that we call home.
Okay.
That's why state investment in community colleges returns such a high rate of return.
I know some of the programs that you teach are just amazing there. I mean, you do everything from beautician school to nursing to auto,
Absolutely.
but now most of those have gotten such high tech, even nursing. It's just amazing. What percentage of your student body is the workforce development?
So it's a growing percentage, and it's difficult to give you a number, Joe, because of the no because of the way in which they enroll, the
Right.
way, because it's 24/7. But it is fast becoming much more than 10% of our student population. But you're right. It's exponentially becoming incredibly sophisticated. Let me just give you one example that I think everybody will hopefully find engaging and interesting. We are going to be the first community college in New Jersey to build on campus a Class C clean room. And we will be able to, in the life science footprint, teach clean room technicians. You and I know that this is a fast emerging field. It is centered in Somerset County, in biopharmaceutical corporations like Janssen, like J&J, like Bristol Myers Squibb. It is incredibly high tech. It is cutting edge. And that's an exciting opportunity for us. But that's just one example. The other examples, Joe, is we're building a brand new EV facility so that our
Really?
automotive students can now train in that leading EV technology. We're building an extension to our advanced manufacturing program so that our students have up-to-the-minute skills that are needed in that space. It's a very exciting part of the college. I am so dependent on businesses and industries telling us, A, the kinds of jobs they're going to have, then B, helping us design a curriculum. We have wonderful partnerships with L'Oreal, with LabCorp, with Janssen, with Triad Tools. It is a really exciting part of the college. And again, I don't want to be stuck on that record needle, right?
Right.
But this is a great investment for the state to make.
It sounds it. Now let's talk about the other 90% because there's a burning question in my mind. Last time you had people attending class remotely, and
Yeah.
we had people working remotely, and even
Everybody.
people that worked remotely in my neighborhood, I live in the Clinton area, are starting to go back to work for the first
Yeah.
time because the workplace, some of the bigger tech telecoms are saying you've got to be in the office 2 or 3 days a week, and these people hadn't gone to the office in 10 years.
Yeah.
So the evolution, the tide went out, the tide came back in. And
Yeah.
how is I see some classes are offered at 100% online, some are 85% online. So for the 90% 2 year matriculated, is that the right word for that courses? How much of what percentage of that is done remotely?
Yeah, so our remote offerings certainly have grown, and they were growing anyway. The pandemic certainly accelerated that growth.
Right.
So, in terms of all of the classes that we will offer in a semester, as many as 20% of those will be online courses.
Wow.
But by far, our students seem to prefer face-to-face.
Right.
There are no large classes at RV. I mean, the largest class you'll ever take is likely to have maybe 34, 35 students. So we're able to provide that kind of one-on-one, that kind of small class that for very many of our students is an ideal,
Right.
learning environment. I'm going to go back though to something you had said earlier. We really want our staff to be here in person. This is a very front-facing college. And if we're trying to build a college that is embracing of people who come, that is nurturing, that says we're going to be a home for you, you can't do that remotely. So we really would like people to be on campus most of the time, students and staff
And
alike.
that's part of the college experience. And it's also part of the corporate experience. I always tell the story, and I want you to talk, but I'm going to go off for 30 seconds on this. We were in New York City on 22nd floor of the Grace Building, and I was working for a large retailer at the time. And it was three of us in the hallway having a conversation. And the boss walked through and did one of these, looked over the top of his glasses, counted to three, multiplied it out times. Sorry. He said, "What are we wasting money on right now?" And I said, "Well, we think we need this product, and we would like to take full to full-time equivalents and put them to work on it for 6 months and develop it internally." And he said, "I agree, we need that product. That's a great thought. But there's smarter people than the three of you standing in the hallway. Somebody's probably already invented it and built it already. Why don't we just go out and buy it?" That's what doesn't happen at remote work. That collaborative, somebody walks through it and changes your thinking that way, and up and down, and it goes sideways by the time you're done. The same has to happen in education.
It does, Joe. And I think for me it is there's an opportunity cost, right, in being remote. And I'm always worried about what we've missed. I'm always worried about opportunities that have gone. And because the students are here, and Joe, everybody knows that students are coming with particular barriers to learning today. You know, COVID really created a lot of learning loss. We also know that students are coming with a range of mental health problems. And so these students, for good or ill, they look at the college as the first place that's going to try to solve all of these problems. And we're happy to try to do that. We can't solve them all,
There's no
but
magic.
we can be in front of them, right? And we can try to help.
And that takes face-to-face.
No,
I understand
it
what you're saying.
does. It does.
And
You
there's a
can't do
place
that
for the other
remotely.
where you want to squeeze free credits in and I can do it at night from home. That's great too.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
what are the newest curriculum courses that you've developed since COVID?
So, in the traditional sort of academic space, data science, machine learning, and AI, they're becoming very new topics, and it is evolving at such a rapid rate. Quite frankly, we're having a hard time keeping up. And in the workforce space, again, it's robotics, it's the machine learning piece. And again, everybody is worried that these new technologies are going to displace workers. They really aren't. What they're going to do is create new opportunities for workers, because somebody will have to maintain, some technician will have to serve those pieces. So again, it's that the skill sets are shifting. We've got to make sure that we're in unison with that shift, and that we're teaching students the right skill sets to survive in these new career technical pathways.
And I think the fear that it's going to replace people, I mean, just a logical fear that, okay, copywriters and maybe people, it gives people the ability to work at a higher level and not have to work on the menial stuff, which is taking 40, 50, 70% of your time. And I think
Sure, absolutely.
that's the tremendous step forward. We become more productive and it allows your creativity side more to do and your repetitive side less to do. It's almost like having an assistant.
Absolutely. And you
Just
know,
not.
if you and I are of a generation, Joe, you know, you will remember that when computing became on everybody's desktop, we thought, oh, this is going to radically change, right? And it didn't. It shifted certain functions. It certainly automated some functions, but it didn't displace people. It
No.
just created new opportunities. So I think we're in that same, this feels different because it's so quicker. It's so rapid. I look at nursing. You know, nursing, we've got these sim dummies now that are more realistic than real people. I mean, so it's an interesting place to be. It really is.
And the world is moving at exponential speed, especially in technology. Almost to
Absolutely.
the extent that it's you blink it if you missed it. It's going a lot
I
faster than
agree.
even we
I
imagined
agree.
it would. So, Mike, what's next? I mean, we talked about some new things, some things people didn't
Sure.
know you're doing at RVC. We're sort of getting to the end of our half hour. What's
Sure.
next for education?
So Joe, that's a great question. And if I knew the answer, I would retire a wealthy person. I think we're going to continue to see innovation and change. Let me give you just a couple of examples. One, everybody thinks the college degree has to be 4 years, right? I think that's going to change over the next few years. And I think you're going to see 3-year degrees because it's too expensive. It takes too long. That's one change. Second change, I think you're going to see many more credentials so that people are going to go to college and not leave with a degree or a certificate, but an industry valued credential. And I think a third big change, and this is why community colleges are ideally positioned. I think you're going to see people continually return to college to upskill,
Upskill.
to stay ahead of the technology. And they're going to come for short periods of time, but they're going to do it throughout their career. And we do know that people, my dad had one job in
Mine
one
too.
company.
Mine too.
And that's not going to happen anymore. We think that probably people are going to have six, seven different careers. And you're going to need to upskill, you're going to need to retrain. So college is going to be really, for the first time, lifelong. And I think that's great.
Wow, that's a lot to comprehend and think about, but
It is. It
I
is.
totally agree with you. I mean, I'm thinking about my dad versus myself. I've had three careers, and I'm in my gray hair area of life. So, but my
Me
dad
too.
had one, and then the one he was working at sort of folded up shop. He decided not to move, so he did something more menial for his last 5 or 6 years just to get to retirement. But
Right.
I've made major shifts in careers just, and I've always worked in technology. I think technology, it excites me, it scares other people, but
Right.
what we're able to do and the speed that it's moving in, I just find tremendous. So, in the matriculated courses, can somebody come and just take certain courses out of those if they wanted
Absolutely.
to?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
I think that's maybe one thing you're going to see too. You're going to see education much more personalized, much
Yes.
more customized.
Yeah, I need one of these, two of these. I don't need a
Yeah.
history course. It's like,
Absolutely.
wow. I mean, you may
Because
need
of
it for
course.
round your life out, but you don't need it
Well,
for what your objective is right now.
right. Because for 400 years, Joe, we have said, well, we're going to sell you this education. Here it is. Take it or leave it. And now students are just going to customize that experience. I think that's exciting. I think this is a great moment for higher ed. I've still got the same passion as when I taught my first course 43 years ago, right? But this is a great profession. It's a great part of, and let's say this. I know that there's a lot of naysayers out there, and there's a lot of doom and gloom, and we have the best higher education in the world. Let's make sure we keep it where it is.
Wow, profound. Well, once again, thanks for coming on
Of
and
course.
let me click off the sound. Well, Michael, thank you for all of that information. I'm going to put a link in my overview on this podcast so that you can listen to the prior session should you wish, as there are several things referenced out of that. But once again, thank you for tuning in, and I encourage you to learn more about RVC at their site, which I'll also put a link for.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Here's what his satisfied customers have to say. Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless. Joe is diligent and responsive without being pushy and truly keeps his clients' best interest in mind. He would return calls within minutes if he didn't pick up. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com. You can call 908-238-0118 or text to 908-304-4660.